Quasi-Cerebral Talk and Tunes. This is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's what we've got cooking up this hour. You're tuned in to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. We are the campus community radio station broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on unceded stolen lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwikwutlwm First Nations. This episode of Typically Tuesdays was produced on unceded stolen lands of the Catesay, Kwikwutlwm, and Stolla First Nations. And here at Typically Tuesdays, we recognize the host nations as being the original storytellers and knowledge keepers of this place, and we thank them for their stewardship. I'm Leslie. I did not like the Heartstopper movie, Heartstopper Forever. I'm sorry. And I'm trying to not be mean this episode, but I will be talking about it. And what I've found is many older viewers and older fans of the Heartstopper series were also similarly quite disappointed by the movie. I have my own thoughts about potentially why the Heartstopper Forever movie panned out in the way that it did and why I felt disappointed by it. But if you're not aware of what Heartstopper is, it was originally a webcomic written by British writer Alice Oseman, and it is about Charlie and Nick, who are two teenage boys who fall in love. First they're friends, and then they become boyfriends, and they're kind of the perfect couple. This story was adapted into a Netflix television series, I think in 2021 or 22. It had three seasons, and it concluded with the final installment of the series, a movie called Heartstopper Forever, which came out a few weeks ago. Personally, I didn't need to watch the film, not necessarily because I hated it, and I'm saying that retroactively, but because I had actually already read the webcomic before the film came out, so I had a very good idea of how this story in the Netflix movie was going to play out. But as it turns out, I'm a completionist, and I never really realize that until watching Heartstopper Forever. And then now genuinely, I can also say, like, personally, I didn't have to watch Heartstopper Forever because I had already read the webcomic and my 2 hours. But anyways, I don't want to be too mean, but today's episode of the show is about this movie. And for the playlist, again, don't want to be too mean, but we've got music that I would say I put together in a playlist specifically as a response to Heartstopper Forever. Usually the series, in my opinion, has pretty good music, you know, a good mix of like Britpop, British indie, queer indie in there. And I did not find the same quality that I would have in other seasons in this movie. And so this playlist is good queer indie. I'll put it that way. Not trying to be too mean here. We're going to start off with one song first, of course. It's Black Belt Eagle Scout with Nobody. Enjoy.
And if I This is Bird Note.
Summertime.
It's just a few weeks past the solstice, and the real heat of summer is yet to come. Some shorebirds are already on their way south, but most songbirds will be here for a while longer. What's the best time of day to look for them? Well, many birds are most active in the morning, not long after sunrise, taking advantage of the abundance of insects at that hour. As summer waxes and temperatures rise, midday heat sends people inside, and birds take a siesta too. And then, both birds and bugs rev up again in the late afternoon. In the early morning, and again near dusk, just about the time mosquitoes are biting, that's when birds are busiest. One exception is gulls. You'll see them soaring and feeding throughout the day, because their preferred foods, whether a salmon fry or a French fry, are available all day long. Hummingbirds are out and about too, because their frantic metabolism requires that they feed almost constantly. But mostly, midday is a quiet time for birds. Are you looking for birds this summer? The cooler parts of the day are the best for a stroll and best for watching birds. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Summertime.
Back here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM, you just heard Promise by Tasha off of her latest album, You Are Spring. Before that, you heard I Don't Know You by Mannequin Pussy. I'm Leslie. Here's what you need to know about Heartstopper, the series, which I think would allow for me to contextualize like why I feel like I allow me to contextualize why I don't really like this final installation of the Netflix adaptation series of the original webcomic by Alice Oseman called Heartstopper. Alice Oseman, the writer of Heartstopper, began publishing stories like basically in like the 2010s, and one of the stories that they wrote was called Solitaire. It was about this high school student named Tori Spring and her like blossoming relationship with this boy who she became friends with named Michael. In the story Solitaire, we also meet Tori's younger brother, Charlie, and we meet Charlie's boyfriend, Nick. They are the main characters of the Heartstopper webcomic series and the subsequent Netflix adaptations. And it seems, if I understand this correctly, based on, you know, the fans of all Alice Oseman's writing, fleshing out the Oseman universe, it seems as though Solitaire came first, and then Oseman wrote several spin-off novels originally based on Solitaire. Of those, one of them was called Nick and Charlie, a short story about the first really big rough patch that Nick and Charlie go through. Which is explored in the final arc of the Heartstopper webcomic and in Heartstopper Forever. That novel was written in 2015. In it, Nick goes through this intense kind of like identity crisis because he's about to move away to university and he doesn't really know who he is outside of being Charlie's boyfriend. Every moment of identity formation that has felt significant in the past couple of years have all centered around his relationship with Charlie. At the same time, Charlie doesn't want Nick to carry the burden of needing to be like the perfect boyfriend, and is really frustrated by how Nick refuses to open up to him emotionally. And so the two of them have a breakup. Charlie relapses in his mental health issues. Then they come back together and everything is all good. This novel, even though it had been rewritten a few times, had gone through a few versions, it was first originally published in 2015. That would be actually about a year before the Heartstopper webcomic would begin to be published online. One interesting thing to note is that originally the Nick and Charlie short story was called Nick and Charlie, a Solitaire Novella. And later on, when Heartstopper became very, very popular and the story was republished, it was renamed to Nick and Charlie, a Heartstopper Novella. In creating the final arc of the Heartstopper webcomic as well, Alice Oseman went on hiatus, largely due to burnout and mental health issues. And when they began to write it again, you know, they had already come to this point of the Heartstopper webcomic story where they had, you know, already had much of this main romance between Nick and Charlie panned out because they had written it in a short story published essentially 10 years ago. I think all of this information is really helpful for anybody to understand why the Heartstopper Forever movie, maybe for lack of a better way to say it, like, is the way that it is. Oseman essentially had already written this story three times already. First as first as a novel, then conceptualized in their brains for several years. They had revisited the novella a few times before writing, like putting the story down into a webcomic form and then developing the story as a movie. In addition, I think one of the really big issues with Heartstopper Forever is the way that the movie was adapted from the webcomic. I followed the Heartstopper webcomic as it was being published for a few years after I had started reading, or after I had watched the television series. And I was really I was pretty disappointed by how, basically to a T, the movie follows the webcomic. When you read the webcomic, the comic, I don't know, there's a book form. When you read the comic, essentially, these moments where we see both Nick and Charlie, like, struggle through their relationship, this conflict that they're dealing with, and their come to Jesus moment, or whatever, they're getting back together, it's presented sort of as, like, vignettes. And there's a lot of stuff that happens in there in little moments. It really tries to, you know, in a way that is good for how this story is being written as a comic, it really tries to focuses on, like, those really horrible, painful little moments of their relationship falling apart, and then those really good moments again when the relationship comes back together. But the way that this pans out in a movie ends up looking kind of like, it ends up feeling sort of like one very long montage. The performances by Joe Locke and Kit Connor as Charlie and Nick respectively are really, I think, what ground this movie in quality. They are very emotional. You really feel how much pain both of these characters are in as they're moving through their breakup. But I think part of the reason why their performances are so good is because I don't think that there is much given to them in terms of writing and story. Really, with the way how the film follows the comic so closely to a T, it just feels like there is so much life that was previously in the television series that's missing. I think a really big reason for that is because there's so little involvement from the rest of the very strong and charismatic ensemble main cast, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later on in the show. But the rest of the side characters really help flesh out a lot of the growth and development of both Nick and Charlie as individuals and also as a unit. And we know that they are also going through their own issues as individuals, but they're only mentions. We don't ever see all of that happening in tandem with Nick and Charlie. As much as I want to, like, jokingly blame queerphobia and, you know, these production companies not receiving as much financial support from producers anymore because of queerphobia, there's a part of me that really does feel like the reason why Heartstopper Forever kind of pales in comparison to the other iterations of the Heartstopper audiovisual adaptations on Netflix is because of burnout. I mean, think about how many times Alice Oseman has had to write this story. And you just get the sense that, like, not only were they tired because they were under a lot of stress to develop the program and to finish the webcomic, but also because they already knew what was going to happen. And so all they had to do was to get right to it. More about Heartstopper Forever after this music break. This is Noso and Party Strange, Dad Made Toast. Enjoy.
Closed down the shop, stars drying up, blame me too. The bills are too long, the kids still want more, wait for you. All right, we got so burnt by incomprehensible. Oh, fight, someone dead to right, be pardoned. Fall back in love, learning to draw, I'll show you. Call in your blood, it's not enough, I needed you. All right, we got so burnt by incomprehensible. Oh, fight, someone dead to right, be important.
bird note. Spanish moss hangs eerily from cypress trees rising from the black water of a Louisiana bayou. The water ripples where a slender form glides just beneath the surface. At first glance, it appears to be a snake. But look closer, and you just might see a long, narrow spike of a beak at the tip of a slender neck. It's a snake bird, a colloquial name for the anhinga, swimming with just its head and neck above the water. Anhingas belong to a small group of birds called the darters, and they look a bit like cormorants. When hunting fish, an anhinga hangs motionless in the water or swims slowly just below the surface, its neck crooked, almost like a cobra's. The anhinga has specialized muscles and a hinge in its neck. And when an unwary fish swims close, the bird's head darts forward, impaling its prey. Backward-slanted serrations keep the fish from slipping off. Surfacing with its beak held just slightly open, the bird flicks the fish upward and catches it in midair. Then it downs it headfirst. And once again, the anhinga glides through the black water. As always, you'll find photos and videos on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
Tu deviens froid. Tu ne vois pas que ça va nulle part. Je commence à croire que tu veux pas de moi. J'ai soif de ta bouche sur mon corps, mais t'es de glace. C'est pas grave, les lustres me caressent. Place. Ça ira.
Fleece with Take It From Me. Before that, you heard Fleur de Peau with Nulle Part. My name is Leslie. This is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. I feel like when I think back to even just a few years ago with the promotional cycle for Heartstopper Season 3, which was the last installation of the Heartstopper Netflix series before the final conclusion, Heartstopper Forever, the movie, I already had a sense that the cast was kind of fed up with doing Heartstopper. And it's not as though they were not proud of what they were involved in, but it was that it was no longer like a no. It was that Heartstopper happened in the beginning when they were younger. And so now as like slightly older young adults, they no longer had the same kind of like fondness for it in the way that they did when they were younger. Kind of, you know, I got the sense that they felt like it was like a little bit embarrassing and maybe cringy to be starring in a program that is known to be very like tender and gentle and sweet. Again, not to say that they were not proud of the work that they were putting into the series, but that they were kind of like, okay, you know, we gotta grow up. Like Nick and Charlie, they gotta start doing other things. They gotta start taking hard drugs or something like that. or something, you know, more aligned with the desires and thoughts and activities of like somebody in their early 20s rather than, you know, somebody who was still 16 or 17. And I really found that that was very, very apparent during this promotional cycle with Heartstopper Forever. But more importantly, I found myself thinking, as I was watching the movie, I was disappointed by how closely it was adapted to the webcomic, as I mentioned earlier this hour. As I was watching the movie, I became kind of confounded by how involved the rest of the cast were in the promotional cycle of Heartstopper Forever when the movie is so much about Nick and Charlie. As I mentioned earlier this hour, in previous seasons, the rest of the main ensemble cast were much more involved in Nick and Charlie's lives and had their own storylines as well. And so it made sense, a lot of sense, that in the promotional cycles of seasons 1 to 3, you saw basically the entirety of the main ensemble cast in promotional materials. And when I saw the promotional materials before I watched the movie, I guess I was under that same impression that, you know, the movie wasn't going to be like a to a T adaptation of the webcomic, that there was going to be more involvement from the other characters. That really wasn't the case. For me, on, you know, a little bit more of a biased note, that made up of a big reason why I did not like Heartstopper Forever as much as I liked the rest of the series. But when I was reading Heartstopper, when I was watching the first two seasons of the series, I just really loved this little community that surrounded Nick and Charlie and were, more importantly, their friends. It really illustrated that these two people were not just in a little world of their own, that they were growing and changing as individuals and as a couple with the help of their community. I loved seeing the internal turmoils that each of the side characters experienced, their character growth, their story arcs, the way that their romantic relationships evolved over time. And what we get in Heartstopper Forever is mentions of that. We don't actually really get to see it. We don't really get to witness it. We get kind of a sense of how their stories are going to play out, mostly word of mouth. And so in a way, for me, it made Nick and Charlie's worlds seem much smaller than they used to be. Maybe I will say that as a person who doesn't really prioritize romance in my own personal life, that might have colored a little bit of the bias that I had when I was watching the story unfold. And that might have influenced the reason why I like the ensemble so much. But it's, you know, it's kind of interesting. Also, in a sense, when you think about just how thoughtfully the rest of the series otherwise would try to include these characters into the fold of the Heartstopper world. You had lots of basically everybody in the story. Basically everybody in the main ensemble is queer. Of the main cast, there are cisgender lesbians, non-binary lesbians, a trans girl, a guy who is cishet who's in love with her. We have a few asexual characters, one of them being a romantic as well as being asexual. So what makes up Heartstopper is really more than just the story about two cis queer boys. There's sometimes this really silly idea that when you have like a story that depicts a mostly queer ensemble, main ensemble, that and they're living like good, happy lives, it means that there's no bigotry in the world at all against them. The thing is that Heartstopper shows us that is definitely not the case. The bigotry, the you know, the phobias that they experience come from the outside world in forms of bullying, in forms of harassment, and so on. But it also is internalized, and we see that with a number of the characters. What that means, though, is that when these forms of bigotry and oppression are depicted in a story like Heartstopper, where there is a ensemble of largely queer characters, it means that these things are depicted thoughtfully. And at the very end of the day, even though the characters have experienced something very terrible, they are still human. They are still treated and written with dignity. They are still written thoughtfully. And the reason why that can happen is because they're not treated as side characters. Heartstopper Forever, though, really misses on that. And honestly, if the writers had wanted to keep it solely as Nick and Charlie's story, I think that would have been totally fine. But it seemed like the writers really wanted to include something further. And it made parts of the story uncomfortable to me. There is one scene that really made me feel weird. It comes in the middle of Charlie and Nick's breakup, and Charlie's friends are trying to cheer him up and make him feel better. And they ask him if he's going to go to Pride with them as a group. Charlie is not into it, and one of his best friends, Elle, gives a monologue about the state of trans rights in the UK. As a trans girl, she is terrified of the state of the world. She, you know, has to face transphobia and trans misogyny every single day, and it will just make her feel so much better to know that a person who really, truly, genuinely loves her will go with her to march at the Pride Parade with her and show her solidarity. It's a really beautiful monologue that comes out of freaking nowhere. And I say this as a one, not a trans person, but two, as a person who has trans folks who I love dearly in my life, and also as a person who enjoys like a well-written story, that felt really off in the story. Not because it doesn't have a place in Heartstopper Forever, but because it came out of nowhere. And because it came out of nowhere, it feels like an offhand reminder, like, hey, don't forget to wash the dishes. It felt kind of like that, like, hey, don't forget the state of trans rights is really bad right now, and protect trans rights. Don't forget. This character, Elle, had an arc in the previous season where she experienced transphobia in a really public and humiliating way. And in that very specifically, like, kind of, like, centrist sort of, like, but are trans rights really that important kind of way? And, you know, if you are a person who is concerned with the state of the world, specifically for transgender people right now, you would know that that is how transphobia and anti-trans rhetoric has been seasoned and sprinkled into our everyday lives to allow for that kind of specific bigotry to be normalized in the past, you know, handful of years. I remember that scene in season 3 to feel really harrowing and to feel genuinely quite concerning and scary, because you have in the story, you have this like young teenager, like, being questioned about her right to exist in general. And they handled that storyline with quite a bit of sensitivity, if I remember correctly, from season 3. And the way that they handled that same issue in Heartstopper Forever, in my opinion, is not sensitive. I think maybe for some people it felt empowering to see in that scene Charlie and the rest of his friends march at Pride in solidarity with Elle, and Elle getting a microphone and being able to shout trans rights or human rights or whatever it was that she was declaring there. At the same time, that was basically the only role that Elle played in this entire film. We heard from other characters that her own relationship with her boyfriend was going through a rough patch. And that was kind of it. I don't know how many other lines Elle got other than the monologue throughout this movie. And it just felt like, surely Elle has a life of her own, and surely that's not the only role that she's going to be playing in this movie to remind cis people that trans people deserve rights. I guess as like a longtime fan of the Heartstopper series, it was just, it felt really disappointing to see the way that anti-trans issues were just kind of like put in there with no follow-up. It just felt super disappointing. But that's just me as like a cis lady. If you are trans and you watched that scene, I would love to know your thoughts. 778-782-2573. You can text me. You can also email me, typicallytuesdays@gmail.com. But yeah, I don't know. I think in addition to what I had mentioned earlier in the program, and like that scene in particular, and just the way that the ensemble just sort of existed in this movie in a way that was really too similar to the webcomic. Yeah, I just expected more. You know, the impression that I keep getting from this movie whenever I think about it is like it feels like just like a sigh of relief, right? It's like if you were working on a project for a super long time and the project was already all right, it was pretty good, but you have given up on making it great and you're mostly just doing it now, finishing it just for the deadline so that you can go on vacation. And again, not to sound mean, but that really does feel like how this movie was. It just feels kind of disappointing for me anyways. Enjoying Heartstopper the way that it was for several years and then watching this movie and just feeling like everybody on the team was kind of like, oh, thank God it's over with. You know, again, 65% is how I would say the movie is. The acting is great. Acting is amazing. That's really it. Listen to more great CJSF programming intravenous every Wednesday from 10 to 11, talking about all things, all genders. Very fun. If you are interested in queer stuff, check it out. Wednesdays from 10 to 11 here on 90.1 FM CJSF. And as we hit the top of the hour here on Typically Tuesdays, thank you so much for tuning in today. I'll be talking about media depicting same gender romances all throughout August, with the exception of 1 week, which I planned ahead far in advance. But stick around for this August series. I'll catch you back here next week. For now, we're gonna close off the show with one final track. I love this band, and I love this song, and I love the activity that they're talking about in this song. Nobody's taken me out to karaoke in a long time, and they need to. This is Queen of Jeans with their track Karaoke. I've been Leslie here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM, and I'll talk to you again very soon. I sang karaoke.